I next met with Dr. Yelena Janjigian, and to begin, she presented a case from her practice, a 47-year-old man with locally advanced and surgically incurable gastric cancer.
So he started on first-line therapy, and at that time, he was nutritionally relatively compromised, and the data for a combination of fluoropyrimidine and platinum therapy is the strongest, and in terms of response rate and overall survival. We consider addition of third drug, cytotoxic chemotherapy, in select patients, but at that time, due to his disease status and his nutritional status, I did not believe that the third drug would be warranted, and so he started therapy with 5-FU and platinum or a FOLFOX combination. I think it's important to note his tumor was HER2 negative, and therefore addition of biologic agents in the first-line setting was not warranted. Trastuzumab was the only option in terms of biologic therapy, and because his tumor was HER2 negative, we opted to treat him with 5-FU and platinum combination. The patient actually did quite well for some time and has experienced response. He developed significant neuropathy related to oxaliplatin, and approximately after 8 cycles, we discontinued oxaliplatin and we continued the patient on 5-FU maintenance. And so he actually did quite well on 5-FU maintenance and has remained on therapy for approximately a year and a half. So in first-line therapy, that's a pretty good run. And again, excellent functional status, and then suffered disease progression with, again, symptomatic obstruction and pain and discomfort. At that point, he went on to receive second and even third-line therapy. So in second-line therapy, we've done to use paclitaxel-ramucirumab combination. And then he received irinotecan-based therapy. And what we see is, and what I tell my patients, is once the disease becomes chemotherapy refractory, after first-line therapy, we're selecting for treatment refractory clones. So the duration of response and benefit to second and third-line therapies are by definition shorter. So although the patient transiently responded to second and third-line therapy, the response was short-lived and again was punctuated by symptomatic disease progression and deterioration of his quality of life. At that point, we opted to do palliative radiation therapy, so his primary tumor was radiated, again, with little benefit. And that's when, you know, this whole emotional factor of frustration and loss of faith in your oncologist and in medicine in general, and it's an emotional and totally understandable reaction. But that's what we were struggling with. Right around that time, the Cancer Genome Atlas started to become sort of more of an entity that we were aware of. And through research funding and research program, I was able to sequence his tumor. And although the next generation sequencing in metastatic gastric and esophageal cancers have not been at that point fully explored, what we found is that the patient's tumor had a somatic PIK3CA mutation. And the PIK3CA mutations, although considered potentially could be a target, generally, in a heavily pretreated tumor, I would not have recommended a PIK3CA inhibitor, particularly in tumors that are not HER2-driven, that are HER2-negative. But what was interesting is in the TCGA, in the gastric TCGA, 80% of EBV, Epstein-Barr virus-positive tumors, are PIK3CA mutant. So which had me wondering if his tumor was EBV-positive. EBV is not a common pathogen in the West, and it's generally considered to be a rare entity, and therefore it's not routinely tested. There are some histologic abnormalities that may trigger pathologists to test for EBV. It's a relatively straightforward test, but EBV involves testing for EBV DNA by fluorescent hybridization. It's a FISH type of a test. But on small biopsies, sometimes it's hard to clearly see these lymphoid infiltrates and abnormalities that are characteristics of an EBV infection. And so some patients don't have sufficient tumor testing for EBV, et cetera. Luckily, in this patient, we're able to get an EBV test, which was positive. And in parallel, so I strongly encouraged him to get enrolled in a clinical trial that we had open at the time, which was before all the immunotherapy data emerged in esophageal and gastric adenocarcinomas. And he was randomized to receive a combination of nivolumab and ipilimumab on CheckMate 32 study, which is a trial that I recently presented at ASCO. And likely due to his EBV biology and this unique viral entity that can predispose patients to gastric cancer, He experienced complete response radiographically, and on biopsies and repeated biopsies, there was no longer tumor visible on endoscopy. So now he's been 31 plus months on therapy, and ipilimumab was discontinued after the first 4 doses per protocol. And we're in this quandary as to, you know, do we need to even consider therapy? And he's doing well. He has minimal, if any, side effects other than having to come in and, you know, see his oncologist every 2 weeks, which in itself can be an anxiety-provoking endeavor. But he is hesitant to discontinue therapy again because he's so worried about it. He vividly remembers what it was like to be sick from his cancer.
I'm kind of curious, this maybe was a couple of years ago, but did he have MSI testing?
Yes. So actually, NSG Next Generation Sequencing is a 450 gene panel, which is compared to matched tumor. And this is the so-called MSKCC impact, but there are other commercial entities that can do this. And what you do is it's a surrogate for mismatch repair or MMR testing. And what you do is you get a mutational burden, which can calculate the number of mutations per the base pairs that are tested, but also can give you this MSI score. So he was mismatched. This was not an MSI tumor. In MSI tumors in metastatic gastric, and this is another case that we can discuss, generally you see specific types of frame shifts and mutations, but in their report, when you're getting report, often it's a 2-page report all with mutations. So this patient only had 2 alterations in this tumor, a PIK3CA and a KRAS mutation, actually a classic KRAS mutation, which is otherwise very rare in gastric, and it was not an MSI tumor. Clearly, there were very few mutations.